MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
As the world's second largest economy, China's economic health and policies can have a profound impact on global trade, supply chains and financial markets. I think that's a given. Investors are attracted by the country's massive consumer market, technological advancements and potential for high returns. However, investing in China does come with notable risks. With us now on MoneyWeb at midday is Ian Cunningham, head of multi-asset growth at 91. And first up, why is it crucial then to understand and also take the Chinese economy more seriously in the current global economic landscape that we've just been talking about?
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for having me. I mean, quite simply, I think when we look at China now, China's a big economy, so the second biggest economy on the planet, and it's going to be converging on the same size as the US in the coming years. So at the moment, we're sort of about 80-90% of the size of the US economy. 20 years ago, it was about 10 times the size, so it's much more important in terms of its influence from a global economic perspective nowadays.
But not all smooth sailing, as you're going to tell me. There have been structural headwinds, regulatory changes. I don't need to reference geopolitical tensions right now. Obviously, that is all going to have an impact or an influence, should I say, on global investment decisions.
Exactly. I think to a degree we need to separate sort of China's structural challenges and cyclical challenges. So I think from a structural perspective, there's pretty clear challenges. So the first is there's a real estate imbalance, which they're seeking to manage lower through time. There is an imbalance in leverage, particularly in local governments and certain state-owned enterprises. There is headwinds from an aging population and sort of now declining working age population. And then obviously the geopolitical headwinds that you mentioned. But then obviously from a cyclical perspective, we need to remember that China actually caused a lot of the slowdown that's taken place in the last couple of years. They moved policy very, very tight in early 2021 across monetary measures, across contracting aggregates, and a lot of macroprudential measures, which had caused a lot of the weakness that we've seen in recent years.
But there has been a slight movement of the needle in terms of the real estate sector. There has been a targeted stimulus.
Yes, I think it's been on a broad basis. There's been targeted stimulus in many different areas. So I think their key objective with real estate is it remains a structural imbalance for them. So they want to manage it lower through time. They've been doing that for the last couple of years, i.e. clamping down, causing that sector to sort of weaken and consolidate. And now what they're doing is to stabilize it. So they want to stabilize it to improve confidence, but they don't want to reflate the real estate sector materially. And they're not going to do a material stimulus. They're going to do enough to cause a recovery and to facilitate that sort of a social contract or maintain that social contract that the Communist Party there have with the broader population.
And Ian, interestingly, there is a comparison in this next question between China and South Africa. There have been recent bailouts of state-owned enterprises in that country. That surely has had some impact on the stability and health of Chinese banks.
Yeah, so I think the important thing to remember with China is it's a command economy, and any decision or any default in China is effectively a policy decision, i.e. they allow that to happen because they control the flow of funds through all the banks. The banks are effectively policy tools from a macro prudential perspective. And what you've seen more recently is there is a leverage imbalance in local government financing vehicles on balance sheet and off balance sheet. And what you're seeing is effectively debt swaps. So they are effectively refinancing the debt of these local governments. They're pushing out the maturities. They're lowering the interest rates to make things functional and sort of sustainable. Now, one of the challenges with that is that will weigh on banks' profitabilities. And we sort of see, because Chinese banks are effectively a state policy tool, there are times where they will have to absorb losses. And that time will be in the coming years. So that's not an area we would seek to invest in.
So, Ian Cunningham, you've given us a very good overview of the situation in the country right now. So how have those developments that you've outlined influenced your portfolio allocation strategy?
Yeah, so I think when we invest capital, what we're trying to do is we're trying to find areas that have tailwinds behind them from a structural perspective, that have sort of prospective cyclical support, i.e. policymakers are stimulating economies, trying to effectively make things look better in the future, and when we see sort of a good margin of safety or valuation support. So across the last 18 months, we have been adding positions within China and Hong Kong, and ultimately we've been doing that because we've seen those stars beginning to align, and effectively we've seen assets on sale in that part of the world. So we've not been buying the assets that we would say have headwinds in front of them, so such as areas in real estate, such as banking, for example. We have been buying businesses that sit maybe in domestic brands linked to premiumization, localization, life insurance companies, businesses that sit in the electric vehicle supply chain, for example. So we've used this sort of weakness and severe pessimism within markets as an opportunity to find great companies with good tailwinds behind them at very attractive valuations.
And Ian, we can't not talk about China's focus on technology and innovation, and that surely is shaping its economic future. That has global implication, but also possibly attractive to investors.
Exactly. And I think when you look at what China is trying to achieve on a broad basis, we're going to see a continued reduction in the headline growth rate of the Chinese economy, but they're working very hard to improve productivity in particular, and they're doing that through focusing very heavily on technology and science and particularly green and renewable initiatives in seeking to effectively boost growth and make it more sustainable on a forward-looking basis. One of the key reasons they're doing that is because the population is peaking, working age population is now slowing, and therefore they need to generate growth through productivity gains. That's sort of the previous demographic dividends are no longer going to be present.
And just finally, and pulling back the focus then, we've spoken about the country's economic trajectory, and that surely would have an influence on broader emerging market economies.
Yes, I think there are potentially some changes in dynamics. Previously in China's growth model, obviously, was heavily exposed to fixed asset investment, which obviously caused commodity cycles, which influenced other emerging market economies. On a go-forward basis, we actually think some of the biggest swing factors in commodities might be, say, investment driven by decarbonation in the developed world over the next 10 years, which could drive more of a commodity cycle. Obviously, we see some of that in China, but what we're seeing in China more broadly is a sort of an increase in trade linkages between China and other BRIC and expanded BRICS economies. So we're seeing a lot more integration on those fronts and a lot more trade within that sort of China axis down through the Middle East, through Africa and into Latin America. So there's a significant expansion taking place in trade across that axis.
Ian Cunningham, thank you very much.